Hi, how are you? Everybody, it's about 12:20 and we are all hungry, so I will try to speed up a little bit and make sure that we'll make it for lunch. So, typical approach to determine causes for yield gaps in the field. We go to the farmer fields and we put there either an emission plot or a test plot where we either apply or we omit a particular input or management practice. Then we compare the yield on that small plot against the rest of the field, and voila, we realize if that particular factor was limiting to crop yield in that particular field. Now, this is how we have been doing things for a long time, and we will probably continue to do it this way. But we all know that this is very cost effective. We know that you really need to have a lot of fields in your trials to make sure that your results are really representative of the population of farmers within a region. It really takes a lot of time, and it's very hard to explore higher-order interactions like, you know, M by P by fungicide, etc. So what I'm going to explore today is how we can complement this previous approach with farmer-provided data. That as a way not to replace the typical approach that we use, but to make sure that we can use producers' data to come up with results that help us to really targetize, to really orient where we want to, I mean, how we want to design those more detailed, more costly field trials. And we believe that there is a tremendous potential for using farmer-reported data for identifying causes for yield gaps. Because if you're able to get information from many farmers within a given district, then you can categorize those farms according to climate, to soil types, etc. And afterwards, you can really help to optimize multiple factors in order to increase yields and efficiency in the use of resources. And in a way, it's pretty much equivalent to running thousands of field studies that capture soil by climate by management interactions. It's cost effective. And perhaps more important, a farmer can take his particular field yield value or input use efficiency and compare it against the values for the whole district, for all the fields within the district where his field is located. So it really provides a very good approach to benchmark on-farm productivity. So again, let's explore how we can use producer-reported data as a complement to more timely and more costly approaches as running field trials. So as a case of a study, I'm going to show you on-farm data survey that we conducted in Nebraska over the 2010, 2011, and 2012 season. You can see here the map of Nebraska. The soybean area is indicated in green. And we collected data from more than 500 dry land and irrigated fields, which are indicated with the red dots. And we grouped the fields into three regions according to soils, climate, and management practices in each of them. For each of these fields, we collect very detailed data about field and crop information, apply input, and any factor that may have reduced yield in any of those field years cases. So let's start exploring how we can use this data to generate useful information for farmers. Here we follow a classic French and Schutz approach in which we plot the soybean yields against the seasonal water supply, where the seasonal water supply includes the soil water at sowing and the in-season rain plus irrigation. The yellow circles represent the rainfall fields and the blue squares the irrigated ones. As expected, irrigated fields achieve greater yields at higher water supplies and they're quite more stable compared with dry land yields. But if we really look at the frontier of this relationship and we define a boundary function using quantile regression, what we found out is that for a given level of water supply, After discounting around 3 inches of water loss through solid evaporation, a soybean producer in Nebraska should be able to achieve around 10 kilos of soybean per hectare per millimeter of water supply, no matter whether the field is irrigated or is rainfed. However, you can see that most of the fields are well below this red boundary function, which means two things. First is that there are vertical yield gaps, which means that for a given level of water supply, a yield is getting a yield much lower than the one that should be, that can be attained there under perfect management conditions. But we can also see, especially in the case of irrigated fields, the presence of horizontal gaps. That means, if you really look at carefully at that figure, what you will see is that you need around 650 millimeters to achieve maximum yields about 5.5 tons per hectare. However, I will say that half of the irrigated fields are to the right of the 600, 700 millimeters range, which means that there is tremendous opportunities there to increase water productivity by reducing irrigation amounts without hurting yields. And then a final comment on this chart is that if you really look carefully between the 600 and the 800 millimeters range, and you compare rain-fed versus irrigated field yields, what you will find out is that even in those fields, water was not likely limiting for crop growth. The yield of the irrigated fields was still much higher compared with the rain-fed ones, which means that it seems like there is an inherent penalty in rain-fed fields compared with the irrigated ones, perhaps associated with the fact that in most of the cases, the best land is allocated to irrigated production, or that in many cases, the planting date in rain-fed fields only start after the planting in the irrigated fields has been completed. So, and finally, this is a kind of framework that any producer in Nebraska can use to benchmark his own yield and water productivity. He just needs to know two pieces of information, his field yield and his water supply value. He needs to plug it here and see how far he is from the frontier. The farther he is from the frontier, the less efficient use of the resources he uses, and a lot of opportunity for increasing yield in that situation. If you are, for example, interested in irrigation management at the district level, you can estimate what will be your net water saving at the district level if all producers that are to the right of the 650 millimeters water supply level can bring their water supplies more closer to the boundary function without hurting yields. So, lots of applications with applying just this simple approach based on farmers' data. Now, besides water supply, probably planting date is one of the most important factors at determining the yield potential of soybean in the Midwest. In this case, what these figures show are the responses of soybean yield to sowing date, which are shown as Julian day. That means that May 1st is day of year 121. And we follow the same approach. We define a boundary function for the response between yield and sowing date for two regions, for southern Nebraska and for northern Nebraska. What we found out is that if you look at the slope of that relationship, this is telling us that per day of delay in sowing, there is a penalty of 32 kilograms per day per hectare in the case of southern Nebraska and around 50 kilograms per day in the case of North Nebraska, which is very consistent with other experiments that we have run in experimental research farms. Again, this doesn't mean that a particular farmer will lose this amount of grain if he delays the sowing, but it's telling us what's the opportunity cost of delaying planting date. So, for example, if you're a farmer in South Nebraska, you can use this relationship to estimate what would be the opportunity cost of delaying your soybean planting by 1 week. If you have a center pivot field of around 130 acres and you delay your sowing date by 1 week later than May 1st or whatever date you want to pick, and let's imagine an average price of soybean of $12 per bushel, well, that's about $5,000 that you are burning in terms of yield potential just for delaying planting date by 1 week in one of your irrigated fields. There are more subtle factors affecting yield productivity at the farm level. And in this case, what I'm showing here are the average soybean irrigated yield for two regions in Nebraska where both disc and no-till coexist within the same region. The fields under no-till are shown with the yellow bars, the ones under disc, stripped or rich till with the brown bars. And in the boxes, at the bottom of the bars, you can see what was the average temperature during April 15, May 15, which kind of represents the sowing interval for sowing in this region. The major finding here is that there was no yield advantage in no-till fields compared with reduced or distilled fields. I mean, there may be other reasons why producers will choose to implement no-till on their fields, perhaps erosion control, costs, whatever. But in terms of yields, we haven't found any advantage of growing irrigated soybeans in no-till compared with disc or any other sort of tillage method. Now, furthermore, there was a yield penalty in no-till fields, but we were able to contextualize this yield penalty. So what we found is that in those years where there was a pretty cool early season, and we're talking about temperatures below 14 Celsius or so, we found that there was a penalty in terms of yield in no-till compared with disc or rich-till fields. And how you can, you know, extrapolate this information and go further. So perhaps you can, you know, based on this information, pick a kind of threshold temperature term, you know, to decide, you know, when you will find this yield penalty or not. Take your long-term weather records and see what will be your probability of having this yield penalty in your no-till irrigated fields. So a lot of information that we can leverage based on this producers reported data. I don't have that much time, but we also found that, in general, there was a positive yield response in fields where producers apply fungicide around R3, even though we were not able to relate this yield advantage to any particular weather conditions. That means that we were not able to associate positive yield response to fungicide with wet weather or with rainy seasons. But certainly it seems like in a very important proportion of field years, it seems like there is an advantage of applying fungicide, even though in most of the cases, I would say in all cases, farmers are applying fungicide without any visual evidence of the diseases in the crop. So finally, this figure shows soybean yield for the three regions of Nebraska, South Central, Southeast, Northeast. And the blue bars represent those fields where there was no fertilizer applied at all. The yellow bars represent those fields where there was some application of a starter fertilizer. And finally, fields where there was an application of phosphorus that was not as an starter. It was like 40 kilos of phosphorus after planting. What you can see here is that in general that there is a trend there where the fields that receive fertilizer application either as a starter or after planting yield more than those that didn't receive any fertilizer application. Now, this doesn't allow us to tell that all fields in Nebraska are limited by phosphorus or by nitrogen, because in fact some of the fields that didn't receive any fertilizer application probably, you know, should not have received any fertilizer because the soil tests were fine. As well as in those cases where in those fields that received a fertilizer application, perhaps in many cases it was not needed to apply fertilizer. But the overall trend here is telling us that there is probably an important fraction of fields where nutrient supply is limiting. And these sort of preliminary results can really help us to focus which kind of on-farm trials we need to run and design to really understand what's the degree of limitations by nutrients that current soybean fields in Nebraska are experiencing. So this information can really help us to prioritize research, time, effort, and really, you know, put it together and really target the kind of on-farm trial that we want to run. So, to summarize, soybean yield potential in Nebraska depends mostly on two things: water supply, and we know that a good farmer on average should be achieving around 10 kilos of soybean per millimeter of water supply. Then the second major factor driving yield potential is sowing date, with a yield penalty of 30 to 50 kilos in yield per day of delay in sowing. We found out that there are other factors like tillage, fertilizer, and canopy applied fungicide that may explain to some extent the size of the yield gaps, but this probably needs more detail on farm trials to be verified. But bottom line here, and this is the message that I want to give you, is that I'm really convinced that farmer-provided data offer a very powerful, cost-effective way to identify causes of yield gaps. And perhaps more important, they can really complement and orient all other more time and resource-consuming efforts to determine causes of yield gaps, for example, field trials and research stations experiments. Thank you very much. Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. That's the challenge of rainfed production. It's not only the amount of seasonal water supply, but also the distribution. So some of those fields, rainfed fields indicated there with the yellow circles, may not be really far from the boundary because of management, but just because the distribution of water supply during the growing season was suboptimal compared with the other fields that are approaching the boundary there. So yeah, that's one of the major limitations of this approach. But to be fair, in our case in Nebraska, I have to say that the pattern of water stress is pretty stable across years. So I don't have the data here to show them to you, but I'm pretty convinced that in pretty much all those fields, the distribution of water supply was not that much different, and therefore cannot really explain all the variability that you can see there. Okay.
Okay. There's no additional questions, so I'm free to talk to some of the presenters.
Thank you. Enjoy the lunch.